It is episode 50. It's a we're halfway to 100 and 1/6 to 300, right?
Yes, and 1/10 to 500.
Yes, it's a great start.
On that bombshell, welcome.
So it is SharePoint Dev Weekly, episode 50, which is actually kind of weird, wild. It's not weird because we've been doing that 50 times. So,
well, if you do something 50 times, you get to 50.
That is so true. Cool. It is today is 2nd of September, isn't it?
Yes.
2nd of September. And it is episode 50. And this time, me and Waldeck are having a visitor who is coming from directly from live from Ireland. As long as you're live, right?
I am. Still.
No idea what you're talking about.
So, Veli, can you do a quick intro who you are? You've been actually in the show before. And let's
I introduced myself in episode 13. You can watch the replay. So my name is Veli, and I'm working as a technical architect for Pramerica. So basically, my job is to talk to the business, translate that to the developers so they can understand what the business wants. I use PowerPoint most of the time, drawing boxes and arrows.
I can relate on that.
You can hire me for your presentations. But sometimes I do POCs, or I try to solve issues on Office 365 site where no one has enough experience. That's me.
Cool. Yep. So, but you've been around for a long time in the SharePoint, and from a developer side of the house. And then more experience you get, the less time you actually have time to develop, right?
Exactly.
And that's why you've actually joined one of the open source projects which we are
and
running.
And you thought, how about we do more?
So I do, exactly. Where I'm doing some coding so I can feel satisfied. My coding passion is the community. So it's the PMP open source projects.
Yep. And you've been actually contributing quite a lot on the web parts at some point and extensions, everything else. But then when Waldeck went to well-deserved family vacation, you took the lead, at least for that time, for the Office 365 CLI, right?
Yes. That reminds me, Waldeck, that I'm still not in the list of the maintainers.
Where? What? What?
There we go.
Where?
There we go.
To do. Yes.
Not thank putting you on the spot.
Update release notes.
Do we have maintainers list in the release notes?
It's just you in the package JSON. That's it.
Okay. Well, I mean, you have all the permissions.
Fix
it.
Of course.
We accept PRs. We you accept know, PRs.
Change Valdek with Villain.
PR declined. Thank you.
No, I could actually I could do that while you were on a vacation. I could do whatever, right? So I wonder why I haven't done it so far.
I have no idea either.
You're too nice. But now, coming back on the what happened during the vacation and then right after the vacation, we have now a new version of CLI available. Can you actually, either one of you, well, he's here every single week, but still, explain what is the Office 365 CLI? What does it mean? Why would people be interested on it? And what is the version 2.0? So what's that all about?
Let it go.
The CLI is command line interface that lets you manage Office 365 tenants and more, right? Because we are now on the Power Platform as well. We have commands. How many commands we have, Waldeck, already? More than 200.
Yes.
It would be more than 200. So we're catching up. And it's very easy to install and use. It's based on Node.js. So with one command, you have the CLI and you can work and manage your tenants. I think we have another extra feature for grading projects that's recently popular, very popular. Everyone is using it. So the CLI tool can also be used to upgrade a SPFX project from one version to another.
And that's definitely widely used. Absolutely. But where did it all started? I think the discussion actually that's pretty understandable clarification. Why does this exist? Because it started, Walter, correct me if I'm wrong, it started from the fact that I wrote a tutorial related on Office 365 CDN.
Correct.
As part of that, we introduced Office 365 CDN and asset management and an asset asset hosting, automatic asset hosting inside of SharePoint framework. And we released that part of 1.2, 1.3, I can't remember anymore. Damn. But anyway, and then I wrote a tutorial and we've cut it out live on the official docs, but Waldeck had a Mac. So Maldiv, and in the tutorial, it says, open up a SharePoint, install this SharePoint Online Management PowerShell and run these command lets to enable the CDN in your tenant. And Waldeck didn't have a Windows machine.
So, yeah, and I mean, back then, I would work quite a lot on the official docs. And I was like, okay, so I want to help, like, guys, help me to help you. I want to be able to run it. I want to be able to test it, to give it a try. And then I can't. I have to run a VM every single time I want to try CDN or something else, because the only API servers that we would have would be exactly, as you said, in PowerShell on Windows. Right. So, I thought, like, okay, I want to have something else that I can use natively in command line and not have to run a VM every single time I want to do some stuff. And then, and I think that was in November 2017. That was during the ESPC in Ireland that I first showed the CLI on stage. We had something like 10 commands back then. And Valen, I believe you were there too. That was
we
the first time you were like,
the hackathon. Then.
Yes, so that was actually during the hackathon, but you were there and you're like, yes, I want to help. And I guess that it started then, right? So now almost 2 years down, we are at a place that we've built quite a big chunk in CLI. We have different commands across different areas. But the most important part is that it can run on any OS, whether you are on Windows, on Mac, or Linux. You can even run in browser if you like. And that basically empowers you to, if you have a mixed team where some people are on Windows, some are not on Windows, you can have a centralized way of centralized set of scripts, to manage your environment, to do things, to automate things in projects. Right. So basically, that is our goal behind CLI. And then another one that was kind of what we will that we are slowly going into more and more is that Office 365 is a big, big area. There are many things ranging from SharePoint to Flow to PowerApps to Teams, whatever. And it's like to manage them, every team develops their own set of tools, whether it's PowerShell or CLI or something else. Like, and sometimes, like even within one service, there are three CLIs or three ways to do things. So we try to, you know, rationalize that and offer developers and admins basically one set of tools that they can use for anything. Will we ever arrive there? I don't know. It will be cool, but it's a lot of work. The great thing that we have is that we have a lot of help in community. People basically who contribute one command at a time, and that's actually how it works. Like one command at a time, we advance towards this completion of parity and getting as many things as are available in 365 in CLI.
Well, the parity is kind of a, let's say, really far ahead of the future.
Yes.
Because obviously there's a lot of things to catch up as well, unless we as a Microsoft, we would actually start considering that as an option, that there should be a one admin CLI across the Microsoft 365 or Office 365, and then we'll join the efforts and all of that, which who knows what's going to happen in the future, because who knows, but
exactly
But it's obviously, it makes sense to have it. And especially if you think about the original, let's say, the starting point, the SharePoint Online Management PowerShell is still only in Windows environments. It is not using PowerShell 6 because it's using built using .NET framework, which doesn't work in non-Windows machines. So until there will be a PowerShell 6.0, or newer version of the SharePoint Online Management PowerShell available, that's the only tool to use in a non-Windows environment, which is completely understandable. Now, what's your point on, let's say, we already pretty openly talked about the fact that we're working on the .NET standard version of CSAM, which will then actually enable the PowerShell 6.0 version of the PowerShell commandlets. What's going to happen with the CLI whenever that's going to happen? So there's a new version of the PowerShell, which using PowerShell Core.
Mm-hmm.
What will happen with the CLI?
Valen?
Yeah, my opinion is CLI has a very good spot. And what I notice on the bootcamps and new guys that arrive in our teams is that they have to learn PowerShell, and not everyone wants to learn PowerShell. But if they have a developer background, they know NPM.
Yep.
They know Git. And this is exactly the same syntax. Yep. And we're using CLI because it's extremely easy for everyone to just type Office Sharp help, see all the commands, whatever is there, and use it the same way as they use NPM, because we use Node, we use SharePoint framework, then you need to use Git, almost the same syntax. So what I notice from my experience, the CLI is still the better tool for people that are coming with, they don't have a good experience in PowerShell. They're not coming from the Microsoft grounds or new hires or students. Everyone is falling back to the CLI, at least in my experience.
Yeah.
I would say, like, in all these bootcamps we did Office 365 bootcamps, DevOps bootcamps, and Microsoft 365 bootcamp is now, all the new people that have never heard of CLI or PowerShell, they all pick up CLI because it's NPM install. Use it the same way you use it as Git. That's what I'm seeing. So there is a spot for the CLI.
And so basically, it's and this is completely understandable, because if you're a new person, you come from non-SharePoint, without any SharePoint or previous background around this development model, then it's completely natural that you use NPM, you use Node, and the development experiences are what they are. They're standardized. Now, if you are, we still are seeing a lot of people moving from the old SharePoint development models to the new model, and they freak out. And for them, it might be actually more natural to use the PowerShell still, because they used to use that in a farm solution and farm management as well, until they get more used to the, let's say, the NPM way of doing stuff. So completely understandable.
Yes, but let's talk about that with the growth of the SharePoint framework, because the SharePoint framework grows exponentially. That means exponentially the developers and the DevOps or the IT pros guys are supposed to support that growth. Yep. And these are all new guys coming from different areas. That means the CLI is there to help them if it's just another option.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even though I'm just the speculative situation, I can't promise yes or no on this one, that we'll release a SharePoint Online Management PowerShell using PowerShell Core. There's actually still the hurdle for anybody who's running the macOS to install the core, the .NET Core, to that machine, and make sure that that's running and all of the other dependencies there as well. So,
I have installed the PowerShell Core, and I mean, on the Mac, it just works. Like the cool thing is that in PowerShell, like, or in Bash, everything is a string. So the moment you need to do anything more than just output some text, you have significantly more work, as opposed to do things in PowerShell, which is a more rich shell.
Yeah.
But you can use CLI in PowerShell too, because that is just shell. You can have still the benefit of parsing JSON filters, the worst. You can still do that. You can still use CLI in PowerShell, because that's just another tool, right? That is not tied to your shell.
That could be true and false at the same time, because it's likely if you're using Mac or Linux, you're used to shell or bash. So potentially you're more productive in bash, no matter if you have access to objects in PowerShell. You might have done that for years already.
Sure. Yeah, I guess that in the end, it depends what you do, right? I mean, there are different things, different tools. And I think, like, the bottom line for me is to offer people an option. Like, offer them choice whether you want to use PowerShell or CLI. No matter if you're on Windows or on a Mac, we have tools that support you in your work.
Yes. But you're saying that there's no... What do you mean? I want to have a one best practice.
Best practice!
Just one. What is the one?
Go to management.office.com and you will download the best tool for your case. You will do a survey, and then in the end we'll roll out, ta-da, this is your tool.
Yeah, but it's the right way of definitely positioning the CLI as well. It's an additional option. It's an additional tool and which is available for you. And there's no right or wrong as such. Whatever feels suitable for the developer or an admin, they should use that.
Yeah.
Because forcing somebody to use something which they're not familiar of doesn't make any sense, or it has additional costs related on that, and the learning costs and everything else. So if they can actually be more productive immediately using the existing tooling, why not? So
exactly.
And one of the things what Wellin actually mentioned there briefly as well is the capability of actually upgrading from a different SharePoint framework version to a newer version. So that's definitely, I would say that's the killer app.
A USB.
That's the killer app of the CLI, and that's how you actually get the people to really interested on. Okay, so wait a minute, what is this? I installed this. Oh, this is brilliant. What else does it actually do?
Yeah.
Can you talk about what does that actually do quickly? And then we'll go to the articles after that. So what is the project upgrade tool? Why people should be excited on that?
Yeah, so if you have existing project in the SharePoint framework, let's say 1.8.2, previously built in that version, you can use the CLI. And there is a command there that's called project upgrade. And it will go through your project. It will investigate all the files and all the code and settings inside those files. And it will generate a nice report for you, what you should do to upgrade to the newer version.
Yep.
So we're not changing the project structure or anything. We're just generating report based on rules. And this is being used later for whoever is using the tool to go through that report and update their projects to a newer version. Now, there was a question how we do that and how this works, how we implemented that. And the answer is very... it's simple. Very straightforward. Yes. So we use Git. We use the Yeoman generator, out of the box Yeoman generator that comes for the SharePoint framework. And we generate different projects using the different options in the previous version. Then we generate the same projects with the same structure using the new version. So imagine that we generate one app customizer for JavaScript, one app customizer for React. I don't know if React is available in the app customizer, but this is how it works in general, web part in React, then web part in JavaScript. Then on top of that, we generate one project with the previous, one project with the latest. We put them, we override the files, and we find out the difference in Git. So it's just Git diff. Then based on that diff, we already know what has changed and we build rules. So that's the hardest part where we implement the rules. But the nice thing about it is Valdek implemented a nice file inspecting engine behind with patterns. So he's trying to reinvent Git, I guess.
No. Not even close.
So there is a really nice engine underneath that we can create more and more rules, and that is generating a report.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then you have a step-by-step guidance and really do this as a summary on your solution, and poof, now you're on the same level as SharePoint 1.9.1 or whatever it is.
Yep.
So really, really great stuff. Absolutely brilliant stuff. I've used it, for example, for creating SharePoint Starter Kit way
Woo-hoo!
Back.
Woo!
First versions at some point. So it's reminded me that I probably upgrade to 1.9.1.
So now we can say that Microsoft internally uses it. Yep.
Of course. Of course.
Why wouldn't we?
We should extend the landing page. Companies who use us.
Yeah.
Microsoft.
Yeah. Cool. Let's actually talk about the CLI briefly on the articles as well. But let's go to the articles now. Let's start with this one. So this one actually was released last Thursday, but there was no social media promotion out of this blog post. So I pushed out some earlier today and more tomorrow, because today is the Monday, the last long weekend in the US, and US people are not working, which is actually brilliant. I have a free evening. Now, It's super rare. But anyway, so if you sign up for the Microsoft 365 Developer Program, you actually now get an E5 and not an E3. And that's a massive deal because now you can actually take advantage of Power BI and Power Platform and additional capabilities. So you can really build solutions which are targeted for E5 customers if you're an ISV or, well, any developer targeting for customers who have E5 capabilities. Now, there are details here around, hey, can I choose E3, E4? How about current upgrade to E5? Stay tuned for more information in coming months right now, as an example. If you sign up for a new Office 365 Developer Program registration, if you don't have it yet, you can go here and sign up for the program. It is completely free, and it will give you a new E5 tenant, which is absolutely brilliant. So you, as a developer, you don't actually have to pay anything to get started on the tooling.
Which makes perfect sense.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And it will renew automatically in 90 days. Why is it saying 122 days? Interesting. They clearly used a picture here which isn't matching the production.
Yeah, it is probably a marketing environment or...
It's a marketing environment or test environment because it's 90 days normally. And then whenever you do the, or use the tenant for developer purposes, and there's telemetry obviously behind of SharePoint Online and other areas, we detect that it's being used using a developer way, and then you get an automatic renew. So really cool stuff. That's actually pretty awesome. So excellent. Now, moving on to the SharePoint side of the house, so some news from Microsoft side of the house. So Chris McNulty, new web parts coming to SharePoint, August 2019. So we will have a button and call to action. So basically that explore action and click that one and it will redirect people to a certain location, which you can do. Wilcock and weather updates. So Waldex weather web part will be finally,
deprecated.
Out of the box weather web part already for a while. There's now updates on that one. And then the world clock is available as well. So you can actually do multiple clocks in here. Hero gets a secondary call to action link for large tiles. Multiple links over there. There's some sort of a social media sharing system with Linked Elevate. Just before this call, we were all wondering, what is that? We need to check it out. because I don't even know what is a Linked Elevate. NewsGetter Hero tiles. So that's a news web part, which is getting rendered dynamically based on the latest news, but it's rendering that in the Hero layout way. And then highlighted content with custom query filtering. So you're able to define the queries automatically in the highlighted search web part. Almost like a content query, content search web
search, part. Yes.
But I think we're still missing the custom templating mechanism on this one. So we're not quite there yet. Remember that XSLT transformation thing?
Oh, yes, that was. Yes, that was big. That was my life for a long time.
Yeah. I don't think you're the only one. So.
I could do things with that.
Yes. There's a lot of people who still consider XSLT as one of the most powerful things in the IT, which is actually true. It was insanely powerful, but quite complex, actually. So not an easy thing to define. Unless you're Waldeck, because for Waldeck, anything is easy. So.
No, that is not true. That is not true. Now you're exaggerating.
Related on the new web parts, just to pinpoint, SharePoint Starter Kit, obviously this has existed now for how long? More than a year, slightly more than a year. We released it in the SBC 2018. And we will do some updates on this one. We plan to do a complete re-architecture on the starter kits. So chopping all of those web parts which have now out-of-the-box matching capabilities. And then also kind of curious on getting any feedback on this one. I'm looking into what the redesigning would be in the way that individual web parts are actually individual solutions. So that means that anybody can take advantage of individual web parts in their deployment in on-premises SharePoint 2019 or in SharePoint Online as well. Right now, the problem is that this only works in SharePoint Online because it's built using the SharePoint Online capabilities. So splitting that will help on things. But more details on that one later.
Yeah.
Now, CLI 2.0 announcement from Waldeck.
Yep.
So basically, the new version 2.02 is out. What's the difference between CLI 2 and CLI 1?
We simplified the login, where in V1, we would ask that you log in separately to SPO, to Azure Management, to Graph. Now you log in only once, and then we allow you to call any command you want. And then we, by ourselves, we switch between tokens for the APIs that we call internally. And related to that, originally, we exposed the API that we use in command as a part of the command name. So in other words, we expected you to know that we connect, like in order to interact, for example, with Flows, we use the Azure Management API. Yep. So yep. We thought like, well, but that is weird. Like, how would you know what we use internally? So we removed all of that, and now Flow commands are just Flow environment get. So, right? So the API that we use internally is no longer a part of the command name, because that is just irrelevant piece of internal info that we need, but that is irrelevant to everybody else.
So basically, it's Teams, Flow, SharePoint,
SPO. Yes, exactly.
SPO, yes. In SharePoint case. Yeah. So understand. Yes. So you don't have to understand what is the mechanism to call that.
How it is implemented. Exactly. I guess that these are the two or three most important things. There are also additional commands that we've added, but that is just a part of the ongoing evolvement.
And there's a lot of people contributing on the command.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. Well, we simplified the logging for the developers. Also supports the GZIP now, and also you have retries that we handle internally.
Wasn't that already available in 1.2 or 1.3?
I'm not sure.
I think so.
Yeah.
Anyways.
And one other kind of a really popular PMP project was also released, the latest version of that one, 1.9 version of the PMP SPFX Yeoman generator, was released last week as well. And it supports now SPFX 1.9.1. So the key point with this one is basically the PMP SPFX Yeoman generator extends the out-of-the-box one, but then gives you an options, like that's actually really an awesome example. It will give you an options like defining which TypeScript version you want to use. So you don't actually have to define that correctly manually after the solution has been created by the out-of-the-box Yeoman generator. As part of the questions, it is actually asking that, which is really cool.
Yeah, and also with that, it also abstracts away some intricacies, because depending which version you pick, there is also the internal version of the Rush compiler you have to have that corresponds to the TypeScript version. So it's like there are a lot of internal things that this simple prompt abstracts away, and you're just like, you want to use this, done.
Yep.
And then you don't need to worry about everything internal to get all of that in sync.
Absolutely. And one really cool thing as well, Angular 6 and Angular 7 is now supported as well. So if you prefer to do your SPFX development using Angular, you can definitely do that. Now, the key point maybe to call out on there, Angular is an awesome framework as well. Absolutely, you can use that. Absolutely support it. The only downside is that there is no Office UI factory for Angular. So if you would like to have your web parts to look and feel like the books, SharePoint framework web parts, that will require additional investments and development investment. But definitely can be done. That's not the problem. Yeah. But there just that Microsoft-driven development is React-based, and that's why the Office UI Fabric React is React-based. React. Moving on the articles, this one is from Shayo. Share SharePoint list and library items to Microsoft Teams. Basically, an example on having then an option to share items to Teams from the SharePoint side of the house. So basically, then posting an entry to a team with the link, and you can modify the link as well. So really cool stuff. It is taking advantage of shared Microsoft Teams functionality and integrates with that one. But quite clever way of having a really useful capability actually in the document libraries. Maybe we should have that out of the box, by the way. So,
So now that we are here, if we can do some specs, I'd like to have, because this is like the best place to write specs, right?
Exactly.
It would be really cool to be able to have a template, right? So that it not only shares the link to item, but you can say, like, imagine you have 4 or 5 fields, you can have them in templates, so you can share a card in a way, if you like.
Yeah, true.
Or adaptive card. Why not post adaptive card to the doc or the item?
True. Now, moving on here from David from Alho, staff sample using list formatting. And so basically taking advantage of list formatting and then managing that using PowerShell and then getting a nice looking rendered list with the predefined settings. So basically using the PMP PowerShell in the script level to define a cool looking templates and automating that then against as many lists and as many sites as needed. So really cool stuff as well. There we have quite a large amount of samples around list formatting in GitHub, under GitHub SharePoint SP Dev List Formatting. There's massive amount number of samples over there, and more is in the pipeline. So more and more is coming as well.
Cool.
So I think the list formatting is, or the column formatting and view formatting is insanely cool functionalities though. Because they give you a simple flexibility on changing the default rendering of the list, so without any code. So.
Well, without any code, that is kind of dubious thing, right?
Because JSON. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. If you look at that, I'm not sure if it's easier than Camel, to be honest. But the cool thing is that from at least security point of view, it strikes the balance between yes, you can include some code, but it doesn't allow you to do anything like embed external scripts and so forth, right? So it is the balance between having this ability to create your own, but then not opening up totally.
True. Absolutely. Absolutely. Cool stuff. Now, moving on to things, Hugo been really active lately, Hugo Bernier, two blog posts this time. So this is his SharePoint Framework Design Series Layout Patterns Part 4. So really cool set of, he has a really nice set of series here. And then he talks about the different patterns and layouts and how they should be behaving and all of that in the implementation. So really, really, really useful implementation and guidance for people to take advantage. Not just this one, the other series entries as well. And this one fixing base 64 SVG icons in SPFX and interactive posts. And this is really around, you can use the base 64 encoding images as your web part icons. So he has then a solution here, and he's basically walking through how those things actually can work. We're using apparently we're using Parker here as well. Parker the porcupine. But walking through the challenge and walking through the option, how to solve that as well. So really cool stuff. Now, this one is from Joel Rodriguez, who just got his MVP, by the way. His announcement was yesterday on Sunday on the, I think it was 1st of September, yes. Scheduled sent. And he was reading his email on Sunday. He should be doing that.
Congratulations.
F5. Yes. Is it there yet?
Now, his objective is to get a list of recent documents in SharePoint. And he's basically then has been doing a kind of a refactoring on what the out-of-the-box functionalities are doing and making this happen. Now, the challenge of this one is that we are hitting this unsupported and undocumented API, which we should not use in production usage. So the problem of this model, and he actually calls this out, this is not documented, this is not available in the SharePoint REST API graph either, but you can make it happen. Now, should you be doing this? Debatable, but again, it shows the flexibility. It also shows the potential direction where we are heading, and then hopefully there will be an API. I cannot confirm or deny this, an API in the graph, which will then expose the exact same data. For first-party web parts, the situation is slightly different. It's slightly unfair that there are certain scenarios where we do this, that first-party web parts are then using an API which third-party web parts are not supported to use. And from my perspective, it's unfair. It is an internal debate all the time how we should be doing this.
Well, but I guess it only proves the point. Like, I think this is one of the areas that's been evolving since we first heard of Delve and Office Graph, because that was the first we got the context of the what are the recommended docs, docs around me, people with way work, like all of that. And then it was really hard to express that in the Office Graph, and then like something in a cloud evolved to use something else. But even that has changed quite a lot over time. And I guess there's still no like solid, sustainable way to have that, which is why this, I would expect, which is why there is no API available for everybody else, because the last thing you want to do is expose an API only to have like, okay, guys, so we're going to remove it in a few years, and then we have to support everybody else. Like, no, that doesn't
work. That's really the challenge around releasing and documenting those APIs, because when we do that, then we need to support them. And we can't just change the API signature anymore after that.
Exactly. And they do.
Having this capability for first party is quite easy. You have one first party web part and then internally available API, which however has to be exposed externally as well, because it's an API in the internet. So it's an interesting challenge. I think we're getting better and better as a company in general, or organization, an engineering organization around these things as well. Now, Vartaman had a new blog post as well, which is around create SPFX library components containing Office UI Fabric React. And this one basically is addressing the fact that we wouldn't have to bundle the right Office UI Fabric React version as part of the multiple different web part bundles and implementations. So you only have one version bundled to a library component, and then from your web parts you reference that, and voila, will reduce the page size, which actually makes a lot of sense. It's a great way of improving the performance. This is actually kind of a good example where a library component is super useful. Now, if we as a Microsoft, if we would actually release Office UI Fabric to CDN, with the versions, the versioned JavaScript files and everything else, then that would be actually the same end result, right? Because you would be able to reference the same JavaScript file from the internet in a versioned way, and as long as it's versioned in the right way. Now, currently the problem is that we don't have an exact CDN availability for Office UI Fabric, and the Office UI Fabric and SharePoint page is evolving much faster. And there can be breaking changes between the versions. So you, in your third-party web parts, you can't reference the Office UI Fabric which is on a page, because that's actually matching what's needed for first-party web parts. And now, if you're using a three versions older Office UI Fabric, you might actually run into problems. So that's why you need to have your own version of Office UI Fabric in the page, and using this one, library components, is a great way of doing that.
It's something interesting that went into the Office 365 messaging center, said that Fabric GS will be deprecated.
Yes. Yeah, but that is the old version, the 2 years old version, I think.
It's not 2 years old. Fabric React.
It's just GS.
That's the GS, the old version of Fabric designs or the UI elements. So we're investing on the React controls, but not on the styles. There used to be kind of a two different teams. One was doing the styles and one was doing the React components on top of it. Then we've merged that now to be one deliverable, basically. I know that we're looking into having also a standardized URLs and CDN hosting for Fabric in future, which would then reduce the requirement of this.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention it as a news in case someone missed it and is still using the JavaScript version.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say that it would totally replace this. Why, right? Because the point here being, I think the core idea behind this is that imagine you have three web parts that all require a button.
Yep.
You don't need to load the whole React, but if the web parts are each in separate bundle, then you load the button three times. That's with this, only once.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But then if you would have version on CDN and the web parts would be built using different version, then you would load three times the whole React, which is even worse. So I think, yes, there is a room for that, but that's a different case than this.
Yep, absolutely. Snapsource. Cool. Moving on here from Mark Anderson, using polyfills for IE11 in SharePoint framework solutions with BMP.js. Can you guys explain in layman terms what is a polyfill? I know, but I'm thinking out that not necessarily all the people know what are we talking here.
Yeah, so
or should I do
in
that?
in the newer browsers, you have newer APIs, obviously, that work. And those APIs are not supported in the older browsers.
IE11.
Yes. And the way it work around that is to have a JavaScript implementation that is working the same way as the modern APIs. The downside is that JavaScript will always be slower. But at least you have something that works and it's compatible. So basically, it simulates new APIs in old browsers. Is it?
Yes.
Yep. Yep. So polyfills are the ones which are kind of a, how would I put it, the middleman of explaining for this browser, this is what it should be doing. For this browser, this is what you should be doing, if there's any differences between them. If we would be in the best possible optimal world, every single browser would support the specific standards, but unfortunately we are not there, and we have this legacy thingy called IA11 still hunting us. Please move the Edge.
Move on.
It's Chromium, please. That's I'm using Edge Chromium because that's absolutely number one and the best possible thing out there, right?
Yeah. The problem with the corporate world is that there are so many legacy apps running.
Absolutely.
You cannot get
away. Chromium those will support IE11 mode as well. So you are able to actually run IE11 stuff in Edge Chromium in
that's good news. Yeah.
That's interesting. For a Chrome-based rendering engine, how will that work? Like, or will it swap the rendering engine?
Yes, exactly. It has to do that.
It will run an iframe.
Yes.
ActiveX control.
Exactly. That's basically what's most likely happening behind the scenes. I'm not 100% sure, but that's my understanding.
Emulator running in Chrome. That's interesting.
IE emulator running in Chrome. Yes, that's actually
very interesting.
Okay, and then in here, homepages for SharePoint all shares the same unique ID. This is from Ilya Struif, and there says clearly a change, which we need to figure out internally as well. So apparently, quite recently, a lot of the new pages are actually using exactly the same ID. This makes it quite difficult to then pinpoint to a unique ID or unique page, because the unique ID is no longer unique. So that's a GUID is not that unique after all. And that's actually, how would I put this? This is a classic challenge in the SharePoint world, because as an example, when you use the fast creation of site collections, the site collection IDs are the same, or they used to be at least the same. I'm not sure if we fixed that at some point, because we actually made a copy of the master site collection, and then that basically then resulted the ID to be exactly the same. But let's see if we go, well, this will be fixed and all what's causing that. Now, there are a few solutions which Ilya is sorting out here, what could be actually as a solution. But I think we need to have a look as an engineering at what's happening behind the scenes, because unique goods should be unique, so not the same.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of the idea of GUID. So
yes.
It is what it is. Cool. Let me actually close from here. And let's get back on the window and only on the video side of the house. What's happening this week? No SharePoint Saturdays this week. I know that there's a Central European SharePoint Saturday was last Saturday.
Last week. Yes, correct.
A lot of stuff happening in social media related on that one. Apparently, it was a good game, good thing. So.
Cool.
What about you guys? What are you working on this week?
CLI.
Oh,
yes. What else? I'm working on a few doc updates. So I have a few things which I probably shouldn't say out loud because people will be angry for me if I don't get them out. Taxonomy app only. So how to write the taxonomy using the app only model is supported. I need to get the documentation updated so I can close that user voice entry. Finally, we're able to push that through. Basically finding the right PM who owns that and then validating with those engineers and then the PM making decision finally that yes, we support, not support that. So it's been surprisingly long hunting down on that one. The second thing is the app pages. So the how the images in the app pages, the selection of an app page image, how do you define that? What's the impact? What's the size and all of that? I don't think we have actually documented that. So I need to address that gap. So should have done already a while ago. And some changes on the Teams stories, Teams integration as well, updated story.
Cool.
But let's see if I can get those out during this week. It's only Monday, so should be doable, right?
Yes, exactly.
Cool. I think that's it for this one. Quite long chat again. We're trying to target this to under 30 minutes, but we just can't make it happen. It's too much to talk about. Hoping to get also the podcast version out this week of this one first, and then a few at the same time, or probably a few 10, 20 at the same time, the old versions as well, so people can actually catch up on our recordings in the podcast way as well. But I think that's it for now. Thank you, Velin.
Thank you.
Again. Definitely good to have you back to talk about the CLI. And thank you, Waldeck, once again. Good to have you back. I'm no longer good alone on this.
Yes, of course.
We'll come up with a new ship on the weekly in a
week.
Yes. Later. Cheers.
All right. Thank you. See ya. Bye.
See ya.